What do you do when you open a present and it's not what you wanted?
Throw it.
Let me ask you this. What's the right way? What's the godly way to respond? What's
the next year.
What'd you say? What's the godly response?
Smile and say,
okay. What's the ungodly way to respond? What's the wrong?
Greed.
Grateful. Yeah, it's basically greed. So would it be fair to say that the right response is gratitude and the wrong response is some form of greed? Right? It's gratitude versus greed. That's what will decide whether you're happy or unhappy when you receive a gift, is whether you respond with gratitude or greed. And that applies to gifts you didn't want. It also applies to gifts that you did want, right? If your heart is controlled by greed instead of gratitude, then even if you get something you wanted, you're still going to be unhappy because you're just going to want more. Greed is at the core of discontent. When you have anxiety on the last day of a really great vacation, and you start to get toward the end of the vacation, and so you have anxiety, what is that? That's greed, right? You want more of that vacation. Instead of being grateful for all the pleasures that you enjoyed during that vacation, you're just greedy for more. This is why kids tend to get irritable on Christmas afternoon. You tell them, you've got all these toys, all these gifts that you opened that you're so happy about. Why are you unhappy? Why can't you just be thankful for all the gifts you got? And the reason is simple. It's impossible to be greedy and grateful at the same time. It's impossible. Every time you get a gift, your response will depend on which one of those two rises to the top, either greed or gratitude. There's a constant war that rages in every heart between greed and gratitude. And you can tell which side is winning of the war by your response to gifts, especially when it's not the gift you wanted. One of the most profound examples of this, what a grateful heart looks like, I think, is Mary, the mother of Jesus, when the angel came and told her what was going to happen. There's hardly a Christmas that goes by that we don't stop and, you know, think about what it must have been like for Mary. Mary, did you know? You know, we think about that and imagine. She's this young girl, marriageable age. No doubt, like every other young person, she had hopes and dreams and ideas of what her life was going to be like and what the near future or immediate future would be like. But then this angel comes and tells her, your life, as you know it, is over. Luke 1:31, you will be with child and give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus. And then he goes on to describe all these amazing things about this child, and he's going to rule on the throne of David and eternal kingdom forever and ever and all this. He gets done with all that, and you get to the end, look what she's still stuck on, verse 34. How will this be since I'm a virgin? She's like, you kind of lost me on that very first part about I'm going to be with child. I don't think Mary heard much of what he said after that part. Throughout history, right, before Jesus' time, but always with a man and a woman, mom and a dad, right? So you can put yourself in her shoes. Imagine you're a young woman, maybe probably a teenager, maybe early teens, and you're told by an angel you're going to get pregnant. And you're wondering, okay, tell me a little more. How's that going to be? How's that going to happen? Verse 35, the angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God." Okay, so no man involved? I mean, just put yourself in her shoes. What would life be like? You're her. What's life going to be like for you if you get pregnant now, before you're married? Teen pregnancy in our culture is one thing, but an unwed pregnant Jewish girl in ancient Israel? Your life is over. Your life is over. What are you going to tell your parents? What are you going to tell your fiancé? What are you going to tell the legal authorities that might stone you to death? This is, Holy Spirit. I mean, what are you going to say? You might believe it because you saw the angel, but
Unless the angel also goes to everyone else in the village, how is this going to work? Sure enough, Joseph finds out. He dumps her. He's going to dump her. He's going to keep it quiet so maybe you don't get stoned to death, but how are you going to make it in that world as a single mom? Not to mention the heartbreak of your fiancé, the man that you thought you were going to spend your life with, now leaving you and kicking you to the curb. Probably never get married now, right? Whatever hopes and dreams you had, they are gone. They're gone. So how did Mary respond? Well, she goes to see Elizabeth, and when she gets there, she says this, verse 46. And Mary said, "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name." Mary has a future of nothing but hardship, suffering, poverty, and shame. Even when Jesus was an adult, still the shame was there. When they said things to Jesus about, well, at least we have a father, you know. Future generations will call her blessed. It's a consolation. Future, but how many teens do you know of that will concern themselves with future generations? You know, most, when you're a teenager, you can see to about maybe age 30. Right? After that, life is pretty much done. Right? When you're a teen. How many teens you know who would be thrilled to find out, well, the rest of your life will be really, really hard, but at least future generations will call you blessed. How many teens would that really matter to? How did Mary have such an amazing response to such hard news? Well, it's very simple. She opted for gratitude instead of greed. Greed would have only looked at what she lost, her life that was now over, and everything that she had hoped for, her hopes and dreams now gone. Greed would have seen that and said, "I want that," and would have been unhappy and empty. Gratitude focuses on what is given and results in fullness and joy. I made an effort to try to illustrate this principle in the book Escape from Paradise, and if you've read that, then sorry to be repetitive here, but I just want to read it here to illustrate this point. This is the character Adam explaining to Abigail how she can reduce her cravings for fruit, and fruit in the book represents sin. So she's craving it so much it's out of control, and he says there's an off switch for that. There's a way to reduce that desire, and here's how. He drew a small cottage piece from the pack. He ran a string through it and placed it over her head. Abigail inspected the wooden pendant. "It's a carving," she mused, running her finger over its contours. "Such detail! Who carved this? You can even see the tiny muscles straining in the child's arms." "It's a father and daughter. The box at her feet is a gift that she just opened." "And she's squeezing her father in gratitude," Abigail said, still marveling at the statuette. "What a beautiful piece. Thank you." Breaking from her fixation on the pendant, she looked again at Adam. "But how does that help me turn off my cravings?" "I'll ask you the question Charles asked me when he gave it to me. Why isn't the girl crying?" "Crying? Why would she be? She just received a precious gift." "One gift. But how many gifts had she not received?" "What do you mean? There are millions of things she didn't receive." "Exactly. So how can she be so happy while being deprived of a million good gifts?" Abigail nodded slowly. "Because her attention isn't on any of the things she didn't receive, only on what she did receive." Abigail studied the piece again. Something inside her melted at the touching display of happy thankfulness between daughter and father. It made her wish she was that little girl. Adam took the piece from her fingers and turned it over. There's an inscription on the bottom. Squinting, she struggled to make out the minuscule print. "Silence greed with gratitude." So I read you that
excerpt because that is exactly what Mary did. That was Mary, that girl hugging her father. That's Mary in Luke 1. Whatever ideas she had in mind for her life and what gifts she wanted from God, he gave her something very different. I guarantee this is not what she had in mind. He gave her something very different. And instead of focusing on what she did, what God didn't give her, she focused on what he did give her, and it filled her with joy. So instead of a bunch of woe is me and grumbling and self-pity and everything, we get the Magnificat, right? Because she had a heart of gratitude. Okay, so now everything I've said so far is just basic. Probably none of that is new to you. Let me just add one little more perspective to this that was, at least for me, new. I've been learning so much about gratitude in recent years, and you've heard me talk about it. And what I learned most recently is this concept of letting the moment of completion trigger special gratitude. The moment of completion of a gift. And here's what I mean by that. When God gives you a gift, you don't know the extent of that gift until it's complete, until you have the whole thing. Like he's doling it out bit by bit, and then once you get the whole thing, then you know how much it is. But you don't know the extent of the gift until you get the whole gift. Just to illustrate, Josiah had a desire to go to college. So God granted his wish. He granted the gift. God gave him this. He said, you can go to college. So he went to college. And if you ask Josiah right now to describe that gift from God, he can describe part of it, but he can't describe the whole thing because it's not over yet. The moment when he'll be able to describe the whole gift to you is on the day of graduation. And because that part of the gift is still future. When I say we should let the completion of the gift trigger special gratitude, what I mean is it would be good for Josiah to be grateful. The whole time he's in school, he should be grateful. The whole rest of his life, he should be grateful. But the time of graduation should trigger a special moment of gratitude because that's when the gift has been completed. And if he gives thanks any sooner, then he won't have the whole gift in mind. He won't see the whole gift. Any later, and it'll be farther in his memory, he won't have as good a memory of it. So the most logical time for the greatest gratitude would be right at that moment when the gift is completed. That make sense? The problem is, when greed enters into the picture, we tend to see the moment of completion as the moment of loss, because it's over. If you really, really enjoy college, then graduation day would be loss, right? Because now it's over. Now, that might sound a little far-fetched to you. It's very far-fetched to me. I hated school, so I can't imagine somebody not loving graduation.
So that's why you went after the PhD.
I hated every minute of it. But it's not far-fetched if you think of other gifts that you do like. For example, a wonderful vacation. Talked about a vacation a minute ago. Most people feel depressed on the last day of a really great vacation. In fact, the better the vacation, the more depressed they are on the last day. Why? Greed. They want more. What's the solution? The solution is to see the last day as the completion, as the bow that God puts on that whole gift. This is where, now I can see the whole gift. And at that moment of completion is the ideal time to be grateful. It's in the final moment of your vacation that God wraps it and puts one big bow. You can see the whole thing. And that's the time, that's the first time you can see the whole thing. You can see the whole gift. And if you focus on all the enjoyment that you had during that vacation, all the good food and the relaxation and the fun things that you did and the beautiful sights you saw and the rest and the sleeping in and the enjoyment of family or whoever you're with, and you just gather it all in, you put it in a big pile and look at it and let your heart just sing with gratitude in that moment, you won't be depressed. You'll be happy. Do that and you'll be happy and full instead of empty and depressed. The thing that first woke me to this principle And I, forgive me if this just sounds so obvious to you. Every once in a while, something just hits me, and it's obvious to everyone else, but sometimes a little slow. But the first time this really hit me was when I was reading or listening to Nancy DeMoss's wonderful little book on gratitude. I think it's titled Gratitude. Oh, there it is, Gratitude.
Thank you, Vanna. Vanna White.
And she... start talking about gratitude and you just drift off and bring back a book on gratitude. That's what our family is like.
You're on the same wavelength.
She tells a story in there about a family. This teenage girl gets killed in a car crash and the police come and notify the family. And when they came and they first notified the family, the very first thing that happened is the father gathered the whole family in the living room, sat them down and said, "We're going to give thanks for the 17 years that God gave us the gift of whatever her name was." And, you know, it just struck me when I heard it, because that's not how I respond. When God takes something precious away from me, my response and my worst, you can imagine what my worst responses are, but even on my best days, my response tends to be, okay, I'll give God thanks for what he's doing in my life through this hardship, which is a valid thing to thank God for. But it usually doesn't occur to me in that moment to look back and say, okay, this is the ending point. This is the bow on the gift. This is the completion of the gift. I thought this gift would last my whole life. Turns out it's only lasts 17 years, but, you know, it's a 17-year gift. And right now, it was just completed, so now I can see the whole thing. Now's the moment to take it all in these past 17 years and think of all the goodness that God expressed to me in these last 17 years with my daughter or my sister or whatever, and offer special gratitude. If a loved one dies, that marks the completion of that gift, of that loved one's involvement in your life. And that's the way all God's gifts in this life, this is a temporal life, right? And so he gives us temporal gifts, right? Temporal. He gives us some eternal gifts in this life, but countless temporal gifts. And temporal gifts are, by definition, temporary. That's by design. God didn't design the meal we just had to go on forever, right? There's a beginning point, an ending point. That's fine. We expect that. College isn't designed to go on forever. For some people it does, but for most people, there's supposed to be an ending point.
What do you, Dana?
I'm not the one with the PhD. You're getting there, though.
And I'm not saying it's wrong to mourn a loss. It's perfectly appropriate to mourn the loss, especially a loss of a loved one. It's fitting, but it's just as fitting to take that moment to foster gratitude for the fullness of the gift, the completion of the gift, now that you know the ending point of it. Isn't that what Job did? I mean, he lost loved ones, right? All his kids died same day. And it was after he lost everything that he said those words, "The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Why did he mention the giving part? Because that's not what just happened. What just happened was just a lot of the taking away. He gets everything taken away, and the first three things, Lord gives and takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Why does he mention the giving? It's because it was in the moment of loss that Job was reminded that everything that was just taken away had been a gift. Had been a gift. They were gifts that had a beginning point and had an ending point, just like our meal. He understood that the coming and going of gifts is the natural rhythm of temporal life in this life. Temporal gifts are not permanent gifts, just like college experience isn't permanent. So did Job mourn the loss of his family and everything else? Yes, he did, very much so. But he also blessed God. Lord gives, Lord takes away, blessed be the name. He blessed God, just like Mary. Blessed be the name of the Lord, right? Because he saw that those losses were simply the ending point of gifts, good gifts that he'd received from God. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away, and you never know the extent of what the Lord gives you until he takes it away. That's the completion of it. when I first got to think about this principle, and I've talked to you about it before, it might sound familiar. When I first learned this, right after I read that book, I started applying it to big losses, you know, like the loss of my career, my ministry, agape, all that. And realizing, wow, when that happened, I should have just, taken that moment and just gathered in the 10 years that I was at Agape and been, you know, grateful for that and all that. And that's been a good, but recently I've been seeing the importance of this in small things. And so now this principle is something that comes into play every day in my life. Every day. And it adds so much joy to my life. And just one example is food. Now, I have, so you probably know, I have figured out, I have a significant eating disorder.
You like it?
I always, always want more food after a meal. Always. If I didn't weigh out, so I weigh out my portions of my food every day, breakfast, lunch, and supper, and that's all I eat. And if I didn't do that, I would weigh 500 pounds. I would. I would just, I have no mechanism in me that says, okay, it's time to stop eating. Time to stop eating when the food is gone, right? In our culture, it's never gone, so it's never time to stop. I always want more food. It was painful for me always at the end of every meal. It's like, sometimes I'd be distracted for a couple hours thinking about food. I'm telling you, it's a disorder. And so don't think I'm joking around about that. It's messed up. This principle has cured that. This principle has really helped me. Now, when I finish a meal, as soon as I start to have thought about, ooh, what could I, dessert or snack or, you know, whatever, I start thinking, no, I've got the complete gift now. And I think back over the meal and give thanks. Just try to be grateful for every bite, everything I liked about that meal, the energy I got from it. Even if I couldn't taste it, the fact that now I'm full, I was, you know, feeling empty and all that. Now's the time to think back over and be thankful. And it sounds simple, but I'll tell you, for me, it's a game changer. It's a game changer. I don't know what parts of your life might need this, if you have any kind of disorder like I have, but most of you probably don't have the eating problem like I do, but you might have some other kind of gratitude disorder. It might be, I don't know, the gift of the weekend. So you're depressed when you have to go back to work on Monday. When the weekend is over, that's the, and I have a little bit of temptation with that where because I get these long weekends, you know, like I'm off work midday on Wednesday and I don't go back till Sunday morning. And so it's this long break. It's like the end of a vacation after every single time I have to go back to work. And it was starting to kind of bother me. I started to get a little of this anxiety. Oh, man, my days off are almost over. You get to the end of the weekend. You realize this is the completion of the gift of this weekend. You think back over the weekend, the pleasures, the sleeping in, the freedom you had to do whatever, the time you had, the rest. Be thankful and just express gratitude to God. When I'm bummed out about going to work again and, you know, the first day of the week, it's because I'm like a child who's irritable after Christmas morning because I opened all the presents and now present opening is over. So I'm just operating on greed instead of gratitude. I'm greedy for more weekend instead of grateful for what I just got. For someone else, maybe it's maybe that birthday that you don't want to admit happened. Right? Some phase of your life is over. You just turned whatever. And you never thought you would turn that this soon. Instead of getting depressed that, you know, now your 20s are gone or your 40s are gone or your whole life's gone practically or whatever, you take a moment to gather in the blessedness. You know, just imagine somebody turning 40 and instead of getting depressed, they say, okay, my 30s. Why would I be depressed? Well, because 30s, it's great to be in your 30s and it's not so great to be in your 40s. So my 30s, God just put a bow on it. I just see the whole thing now. I can see the whole 10 years that God gave me. My 30s, my body was relatively healthy. I had, you know, energy. I had this, I had what, good looks, whatever I used to have. And be grateful for that decade, you know? And Christmas is a great time to not only learn this and practice this, but to teach it to our kids and our grandkids. Maybe after all the opening of presents is over, take a moment to just gather them all in a pile and get the kids and just look at this whole pile and recall the moments of joy and the laughter and the smiles and, you know, what was your favorite part? Remember when your sister opened the one and everybody laughed, and I remember this, and I love the part when we were all laughing and stuff. And now this gift from God of Christmas morning and all the fellowship, it's complete. We just got the whole thing. And so right now is the time. Let's look back and let's savor it. Let's bask in it. And let's express joy back to God in gratitude.